This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2024, held at Ephrata Business Center in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, on March 1 and 2, 2024.
Welcome here. There's still some wandering stars out there that are trying to find a place to go, but I think we'll start. I'm aware that not everyone here in the room is a pastor, but I think probably most are. And I found the initial. By the way, I don't mind if you brothers in the back, there's choice seats right up front here. I sometimes do this. I'll take a chair and I'll set it here and I'll say, this is the front row, you mayn't sit there, but from here back it's open seat. So just in general, I think I know ministers are supposed to be involved in school. I'm not sure what you think that looks like, but as far as providing vision and leadership, there's another group of people that typically we give that responsibility to, namely school board. And so if the school board's responsible to provide leadership to the school, where do ministers fit into this? And so that there isn't either a conflict or the two are one's threatened by the other and that kind of thing. Another thing I recognize, there's all kinds of different structures I'm sure that are represented here. There are probably church schools and community schools where there's not just one church that's responsible for the school. I'm curious what that grouping might look like. If your church is the primary leader in your school, raise your hands. Oh, most are. Good. Because I'm also aware that there's many community schools, and I personally don't have hardly any experience with that. Ours is if you've been to Faith Mission Home, or Mission Home Virginia, or Free Union, we're not on Main Street, we're a little bit off the beaten track, and so there's a community, there's a church, there's a school, and there are a few students that attend from a Holiness Pentecostal local group, but basically it's just the children from our own church. And so that's my frame of reference in that. If I would look at a scripture, which I pondered at some length in preparation for this, it would be from 1 Peter 5, and I already referenced that in my other workshop, but I'm using it in a different way. Peter says it this way, "The elders which are among you I exhort, who also am an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed." And then he says, "Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint but willingly, not for filthy lucre but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage but being ensamples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away." And he goes on to give some very interesting perspectives on working together and being leaders in a church setting. Younger, submit to the elder and cast our care upon the Lord. Be sober, be vigilant. We have an enemy. There are just many unique principles there. I told the committee I'd be much more comfortable in giving an expository message on 1 Peter 5 than a topic relating to ministers providing leadership. But that's not the assignment. I will refrain from doing so. However, that verse 2 did provide an interesting springboard for me. I think as ministers, and you're going to need to help me so that as ministers we stay in our place and let school board do what they're responsible to do while at the same time providing. And I have several points that I want to consider. The first is that I think ministers are responsible to simply give pastoral care. We have been called as ministers to provide this to everyone in our in our care, whether it be church staff, teachers, families, difficult parents, whatever the case may be. And the way he words it here is to take the oversight thereof. And I find that an interesting word study. It's not used often in the New Testament. If we would follow that through, Hebrews 12:15, it's used where he says, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest a root of bitterness spring up. But the idea of looking diligently is the same as taking the oversight thereof. And so there's a diligent vigilance that's demanded of us as pastors in our churches, schools, homes, families, in a broad sense. We are to be alert to what is happening there. And then he mentions the idea of feeding the flock. And if you've done a study on that, that means more than just pour grain into the trough. It has the idea of care. It has the idea of being alert to needs, nurturing, and so on. And he also mentions the idea of being examples to the flock. And I think that's worthy of mention here, that and we'll talk later about visibility, how you can relate to the children as a pastor. But I think it's important that you are, if I want to say it bluntly, are the child's hero, that you are the kind of person that the child in their heart, they say, someday I want to be like Brother Enos or George or Alvin or Dave. He's a man of God. I know it. And somehow there's a connection there where the child, he feels that in his heart, that you're a hero to them. How do you become that? That's another question. Be a personal example. When you preach, teach. When you have opportunity to teach, preach. I was ordained to the ministry 3 months after I started teaching, and so all my teaching career, excepting for the first 3 months, were as a teacher-preacher. Felt a little sorry for my children. Sometimes they listened to me all week, and then they had to listen to me on Sunday. But I actually considered that to be a tremendous opportunity. When the children would file back and leave church and I was there to shake their hands, they weren't just children, they were my children. They were my students. There was a personal connection there. We knew each other very well. And so I just felt like it had opportunity that was very valuable. I enjoyed teaching. Even as a minister, I told them they may as well get used to me. I plan to teach their grandchildren, and I was serious about that. Had it not been for the call to foreign missions and so on, it's really tough to be a high school teacher when you're in Australia and Ukraine and so on, and that's where some of my calling has been. And so eventually I said they really need to find another. I had to do either or. I could not be take on preaching hither and thither and still be in high school. He mentions the thing here also, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. Preachers, it's easy for us to just get proud of our calling. And I want to just encourage us to humility, under the mighty hand of God. And I don't know what you see as the mighty hand of God in your life. I'm sure it could be different things, but I like to think of the mighty hand of God in a person's life as the authority that God has put over you. And so though you are pastor, you are bishop, you are ministerial rep, you're under authority as well. Remember that. And let us be humble under the mighty hand of God. Now we have work to do and responsibilities to carry out. Pride doesn't need to be part of that equation. I don't know if your church and school have a church-school disconnect. Many communities do. And you can do a lot to fixing that. And what I mean by that is simply that there are especially parents that have that don't have a child, well, even parents that have children in school, you know, they look at the math that is being taught today and they say, this stuff's weird. They mix alphabet with the numbers, letters and numbers. We didn't have this when we went to school. And there can be a divide between church and school to where the church is doing one thing and the home maybe, and school is doing something entirely different. And there, you know, the parents aren't quite sure what's happening down there at school. They hope it's okay, but they've hired teachers to do their thing. But wow, they're into stuff that I didn't have when I went to school, and a divide happens between church and school. And I think pastors are in a key role to help pull that together. And we'll look at some practical ways. But I don't know the extent of the disconnect in your church and school, but we could turn to Deuteronomy 6. I don't want to imply that this is a problem in every church and school, but it certainly is a potential. Second idea that I'd like to address is that you as a pastor team work towards making the school not only the church, an arm of the church, but literally the church in action. And this was brought into the forefront in our situation. Maybe just ask the question. Yesterday morning, Ken was talking about suffering and challenges, and if the state challenges our work, oftentimes the pastors would get drug into it. If your school is would come into trouble on a discipline issue, that a parent would take you to court, or and a sexual abuse issue, or almost whatever the case may be, the church will ultimately get involved or need to be involved. And so you would come in there. As he was talking about that, my mind, of course, went back in the fall of 84. We were in court, not so much from a church and school as Faith Mission Home was sued. And the intent was to close the home. And it was over a discipline issue, but we found ourselves on the witness chair by the hour. We were in court for 4 years, that in and out by the day and by the week, literally. It was a very, very difficult and stressful time. But during that time, we worked with many different attorneys and a Christian Law Association, who was based in Ohio at that point, was very helpful. But my question is, if your school is a part of your church, it experiences immunities and privileges that just a standalone school does not. And so my question is, we said at the beginning that our churches operate church schools. What would convince the court that your school is in fact a church school, a part of it? Open discussion.
Church elects the board.
Okay, the church elects the board, and the board members are from the church. Excellent. What else?
Constitution says that the board works under the church leadership.
Okay, so there's a constitution. Does your church have a constitution? Right along with that would be the mission statement, and I'm going to address that a little later on, the need for a mission statement that is clear and defined what this school is about, and that ties it to the church. Very important detail. What else? If the court didn't want the church involved, they say, yeah, right, you say this is a church school, but ultimately this school is operating as a school and comes under the laws of the state of Pennsylvania as a school. What would you have to say? This school is our church, in action. It's not a standalone educational institution entity.
Maybe the values that are taught at school that line up with the church, and maybe on the church property, maybe the school's on the church property.
Okay. Both of those are valuable. Not always possible, but valuable. We'll look at just a few indicators. Often they will look at the money. How is your school funded? Is the church, so we could ask the question, who buys your Sunday school quarterlies? Church. Comes out of the general fund or whatever. Who pays the teachers? Well, that's a school fund. School has a separate fund. If it does, they'll say, well, this shows. You have a school fund and you have a church fund. They're not together. They're two separate things. Look at where the money is. And those were some things that came up in our situation. They look critically at funding. Is it coming from the government? Is it coming from churches? Is it coming from individuals? Is it how? Where's the money coming from? And how is it being funded? Another thing that became unique, and this was already mentioned, I'd like to just highlight this. So your school staff, you have on at your reorganization, you elect Sunday school teachers. How about if at reorganization we have the Monday school teachers too? But normally we don't do that. We do that a little differently. But let me just back up. All humor aside, my question is, we consider our Sunday school teachers as church staff. We usually don't call them that, but that's what they are. They work within the directives of the church. Do our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday school teachers, are they church staff or are they school staff? And the closer, the better you can tie that together, the better you will be in a court situation. If you can prove that indeed, these are our Sunday school teachers, these are our Monday school teachers, one and the same thing. So who's staff? Another indicator is our dependence on public entities, subsidies, if you please. I know I'm assuming there's people here that depend on public school for busing. Buses hardly come back in our neck of the woods, so it's a non-issue. Everybody needs to take their children to school. But if you depend on public busing, other government entities, I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm simply saying those would be indicators that your school and church is depending on outside resources rather than just being a church school. And again, please don't go home and say that there was a man at CASB that said we can't use public busing. How many of you here use public busing? Okay, just a few. And I don't know the parameters of that, of how that works in your situation. I would just say be careful. I don't know if you have to sign for it or if it's simply just given. I'm not familiar with that. Back to the main point, my concern is simply that it is obvious that our school is the church in action, not a standalone educational entity. Take steps to tie those two things together. Third idea that I'd like to explore here just a bit is the idea of a ministerial rep on the school board. Is there anybody here that does not have a ministerial rep on your school board? Okay, I am glad to not see any hands. In yesteryear, it was not always that way. And so that has greatly changed. I feel like this is just a key factor in tying these two things together. That we can't have the whole ministerial team on the school board, but there is a rep there. And I'm sure there are different responsibilities that the rep carries in different schools. We'll look at that in just a bit. But trust is a huge key or a huge element in this thing of a ministerial rep being on the board, for obvious reasons. But I think it is important. The board should know that what is discussed there is not hidden from the ministry. That is our first agenda in our ministers' meetings every time. We're not, maybe not the first, but the first after the peripherals, the reading of the minutes and whatnot. We always have a school report at our ministers' meetings, and the minister rep gives us the updates from either school minutes or what's happening, finding teachers, if there are student issues. We spend a little time with that every time at a minister's meeting as to what's happening there. And I think in the same way, the ministry should have the complete confidence that their vision and burden is being represented on the school board with decisions that are made there. Any comments or questions that you would have? How is this working in your school? Anything that you'd like to contribute?
How often do you have joint meetings, ministers, all the ministers, all the board, just a visionary meeting?
Okay, how often do you have a meeting that has all the ministers and all the board? We don't have those on any regular basis. It would be valuable. Is there anybody here that does, has all ministry and all board together in a meeting?
Once in a great while. The most current being Monday evening.
Mm-hmm. I think that could be a very valuable thing. Any other input to the question or the thought? The thing of trust being a key element there, I just want to highlight that if the board in any way doesn't trust the ministry, or vice versa, if the ministry really isn't sure what's going on, that then we need that meeting for sure. There should be no question as to the direction, the goals, the vision of the school board and ministry, that shouldn't be on the same page, meshing very well. Okay, another idea. I'd like to encourage you as ministers to be visible at school, to regularly teach something at school. And I know we have jobs, we have other responsibilities, we're not in our pastor office 7 days a week or 5 days a week even. I'm well aware of that. But I am strongly encouraging you to be involved in one way or another. I'm going to give, well, maybe I should just ask first, how can that be? What are things that you can do that improves or increases your visibility at school? Do any of you teach a regular Bible class?
No, I've been teaching PE for 2 years now.
You're teaching PE. That is interesting. And you're a minister. You run around Sunday morning too?
usually break a sweat, but not because of that.
Very interesting. Minister that teaches PE, how often? Once a week?
Last year my wife and I did twice a week. This year the chairman and his wife take one day, and we take one day. So once a week now.
Once a week. Excellent. Other ideas? Yes?
Teach a Bible class twice a week and at devotions once every month.
How long is your Bible classroom? Is it multiple classes? Are you there for a forenoon or just?
Usually just the upper grades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. Others?
I haven't done it recently because the school got bigger, but our school was smaller, and we only had a visiting, like every Wednesday a parent comes in and has school devotions. A number of years ago, the school was smaller, parents only came in every other week, so I came in the off week when a parent didn't come in, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a couple of years.
Something that we have done since the beginning, and it's varied some through the years, but the basic format is still there. And that is, we have parents that come in every Monday morning for devotions. Every Monday morning is parent devotions. But then Wednesday morning, we called it chapel. And we differentiated for years, just the ministers had chapel. And the way that was started, we did it for a number of reasons. And it wasn't my doing, I wasn't ordained then when it was started. But the administrator at that point felt that it was very important to have a visibility of a minister in church, in school, at least once a week for either Bible class or whatever. And we chose to do the Wednesday morning devotions time as a kind of like a Bible class, differentiating maybe just a little bit from the Monday morning that was a typical devotions, either scripture or story or object lesson or whatever it may be. Wednesday morning, a little heavier. Maybe some preaching, some exposition, following on a child's level, but it was from a pastor with the intent to teach Bible. And that has stuck. Now, it actually got kind of heavy because for a while there was only a couple of us ministers, and so that turn came around very regularly. And so a number of years ago, we included the school board. We said we think the school board should have that opportunity as well. And so now that's the way it's been the last number of years. And we always arrange that somebody divides that out where we have a block of time. So usually it's about four Wednesdays in a row that we have, and so generally it's a series that each of us do, and I think that has been a very positive thing. I asked the teachers for some input for this workshop, and that's the first thing that was mentioned was the appreciation for the Wednesday morning minister involvement in school.
Another question about that, is that longer than the Monday morning thing then, or?
Not much. Okay. Not much. We have a half hour, 8:30 to 9. There's a song, and then you have 20 minutes, 25 minutes to develop a thought. So
we had a teacher that was not at all comfortable with teaching music. Our bishop went in and taught music once a week.
Bless his heart. Yeah. Excellent opportunity. Other ideas? Wonder how many bishops here would be comfortable going and teaching music. That's a great possibility. Here's another idea. I don't know how many pastors here would be comfortable with substituting. I think I would just highly recommend it. It does not hurt for the children to see you blunder a little bit. It doesn't hurt for them to see you pull out what little bit of hair some of you have. It doesn't hurt for you to say, I don't know. I mean, you're used to standing behind the pulpit and having the answers to life situations based on the Word of God. Here it is. Take it or leave it, you know. Sometimes when we're in a teacher situation, it's not that easy. And it's good for you, it's good for me to substitute time and again. I would highly recommend it. I don't know how many of you, maybe I'm preaching to the choir, maybe all of you are regular school available substitutes here, but somehow I'm suspicious by your smiles that may not be the case. But I would highly recommend it. Any comments or pros or cons on that?
So I'll actually be doing that on Monday and Tuesday next week. And it was kind of a last resort. We talked about it a little bit. Should one of the ministers be available to substitute? And our teacher didn't think he really wanted to go that route. But then he couldn't find anyone else, so it fell back. It'll be the first time doing it there. I used to substitute at home. But it'll be the first time since I'm a minister and at a new school. So I wasn't sure how to feel about it, but And the teacher wasn't either, so that gave me even more questions.
What grade levels are we talking?
Well, it's set up as a learning center. It's the learning center for fifth through high school.
Mm-hmm. You'll
do
all right.
Most of them are working at your own pace, but there's two classrooms.
You'll do all right. There's an older brother sitting in the back that not only substituted, but substituted for 2 years, was it, Elmer? Stepped into the classroom for 2 years while their teacher went to FB. My hat's off. I would need some encouragement to pull off a 2 year stint. 2 days, I'll try, but 2 years, wow. That was good. I'd like to encourage you to preach an occasional message on Christian education. I wonder when the last time is you preached on that. I think that is a way for you to not only exert influence, but to build your school and your church and to help tie them together. And there is, and when I say occasional, don't put every 5 years in there. I think annually. I like to preach at least one message on Christian education a year. I don't always get it done. But if the year rolls around and I haven't, it begins to work on my mind. It works its way into desktop position. There's so much you can address. You can do an exposition from Deuteronomy 6, and there's many other scriptures that talk about teaching. Look at Psalm 51, where David cries out to God and confesses his sin. I think it's there. I should have looked. I'm just pulling from memory now. But anyway, it's along about verse 10. It's, "Then will I teach sinners," and so on. After there's personal cleansing, "Then will I teach." And the Great Commission, "Go ye into all the world, teaching them." There's just many verses that have to do with teaching and instruction that you can use as a springboard and then tie in things like the values of Christian education. And maybe there's other ideas that you'd like to do. Create positive vibes for the school. And I recognize that different schools do things differently, and it doesn't hurt to address that in a message. But this is the way we do it here, and for these reasons, and so on. Hate to use a business term, but sell your school. As you preach, you have an idea, the opportunity to highlight the values that your school is offering to the parents. Anything you want to share on that? Let's go on to the next idea here. Number 7. This is my final point. I have a few ideas here on, I was considering the way that school board and pastors relate and things that pastors can do that impact the school in a positive way. And while pastors and ministry is not making policy, the specific day-to-day policy, I'm going to call them broad stroke policies, overarching ideas. And one of them, the first one that I'd like to address here, is the idea of a school mission statement. And that was addressed here earlier, a purpose statement. Does your school have one? I brought ours. This is our what's in the front of our student handbook. And in yesteryear, a number of years had rolled around that nobody had drawn attention to this. I find it interesting, and you're welcome to take pictures of that if that helps anybody. But our principal highlights that every year at the first day of school, we always have either an evening or day when parents and students, school people are together. Children bring their pencil boxes and whatnot, and then we meet in the chapel, and there's a principal's report and a welcome speech by the chairman and that kind of thing. And the last number of years, our principal has highlighted that at that time to the parents. This is what Faith Mission School is about. This is what we're going to be working on this year. And usually not only does he read it, but he maybe just elaborates on a few of the points that are there. And I have found that to be both refreshing and encouraging. You know, it'd be easy to say that your school board should do this, and they probably should, but I think it's a great thing for the ministry to be involved with as well. And maybe this would be the kind of thing that where we talked about this meeting of school board and ministry together, hammer out a purpose statement and how that may look and flesh itself out in school. The second thing that I think ministry should be responsible for is the brothers meeting stuff, is what I decided to call it. And there are a number of items that would fall in this category. Again, maybe in your school, the school board takes care of all these things. I think it's pretty important for ministry to, in some way or another, to be involved. If there are major changes or major issues that come up, rather than the school board deciding it, our ministerial rep brings that back to the minister team, and it usually, unless it's something that we can simply answer and give feedback, we'll say we'll put that on the brothers' meeting agenda for the next brothers' meeting, unless it's, you know, they can wait until then. And I have a few ideas, and then I'll open it up for more yet. But homeschool, is there going to be, do we allow it? And how will it look? We were faced with that recently. Our church has had kind of a strange policy. For years, we didn't allow homeschooling. And there was parents that would have stood on their head with that. And we actually got some pretty strong accusations that that's an unbiblical stand and all that. And I understand why. It was simply that our school was small, and we felt like, for starters, we needed all hands on deck. We needed full support from everyone in church for that to work. And as the church and school has grown, and unique situations, mission involvements, and so on, and of course, we always allowed school. I mean, it wasn't that we were opposed to it if somebody was gone, but as far as for regular attenders, we wanted all children there. And a situation came up that it seemed like homeschool would be a reasonable option. But then, you know, the parents wondered, can we bring the child in for chorus, for this, that, and the other thing? And our teachers, somehow they weren't just clicking their heels together and jumping up and down for the opportunity for this child to be elsewhere 5 days a week, and then when the field trip occurs or the chorus time is, then they want to jump in and go along with, and they don't understand they're not part of the culture of the school. And we said maybe not. Either get in or you can finish the sentence, but the idea, we really encourage that. But it happened at a brothers' meeting. It happened when the church was together and discussing pros and cons and how this might work. Now, we had some feedback from teachers prior to the brothers' meeting, but I think that's a good thing for ministry to lead out on rather than just school board policy. I don't know if we're old school or new school, but our school has uniforms. And every so many years it comes up, it's a question. Shall we continue? There's parents that are very pro. There's parents that, what is that all about? And what is it for? And so occasionally we need to resell it. It's actually come to a vote several times, and so far it's always carried to continue. We feel there's significant benefit. I'm just giving it as an example. I'm not saying that you should go home and make that change, but if you do, let it be at a brothers' meeting, not just a school board policy. Let it be something that the parents have opportunity to speak into. You know, if your school board decides to go with a new history book or something, that's fine, probably, if they move in the right direction, right? But if there are significant curriculum changes, I think it's a wise idea for parents and school board and ministry together, either in some other format. I think brothers' meetings are a great place for that to take place, for a wholesale or for significant or major curriculum decisions to be made. What else would you like to add to the list?
Maybe things like the busing issue.
Things like the busing issue. I think that's because it involves parents. I mean, if we're not going to bus, then that means parents are going to have to drive. The implications of that. Excellent. Anything else?
What about school salary?
School salary. What about school salary? Should that be, who makes that decision? Is that just a school board issue?
Do you have a yearly business meeting to decide some of that stuff? That's what we do. What do you do currently for that?
Currently, the school board, we have a budget meeting usually after the end of the term. The board does the budget meeting and then they give the deacons for approval. But we are looking at maybe a pretty major increase in school salaries. And so we're taking it to the church to see, are you willing to help us pay this? Or do we just hand them the bills that we decided with $10,000 more this year to chip in? That's kind of what we're facing.
Yeah. We faced that last year because we went from one married brother on the board to two. It was a significant impact on, well, it's a significant difference in salary, which means a significant difference in tuition. We do have a basic tuition and the rest is made up of offerings, but that basic tuition jumped. Why? And that was taken up at a brother's meeting. Our business meeting is basically a reporting meeting where we have all the committees of the church report on what's happening in their department, the trustees and deacon and school board and so on, give a report. So it's not a business meeting where decisions are made. That would be more of a men's meeting in our format. But yes, if there's a significant change in salary or tuition, the school board will bring a proposal, or this is what we think, where we need to go. It's approved at a brother's meeting. Excellent. Anything else?
Changes to constitution rules go through the church.
Yeah. Changes in the constitution. And I don't know, is your constitution different from like a student handbook? Okay. The student handbook would have editorial stuff that changes that wouldn't, but changes to the constitution would be a broad stroke policy kind of idea. Another one that I had was this here, you know, if there's building or renovation, school board brings a proposal, we really need to renovate the bathrooms, this needs to be done, this is what we think it's going to cost, what do you think? These are things that come to a brothers meeting, or ministers probably are chairing it, and just giving broad brush stroke policy input. That's basically what I have. Is there something that you'd like to ask, contribute yet to this workshop? My encouragement as ministers is to uplift Jesus, and as he is, it says he has promised that he will draw men to himself. And that's what we want to have happen in our schools, is it not? God bless you. You are dismissed.